I år 30 år siden Turboneger debutert live. Jeg traffet dem I fjor når Rock'n'Roll Machine ble sluppet, og siden de spiller en god del konserter I sommer, må vi kjøre en runde Turboneger nå. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, det her Jernverket.
Now we're on. Okay, so we could just start by you guys presenting yourselves. This is going to be in English because you haven't learned Norwegian yet.
This is true.
Hello, two Hello. Pieces of Turbonegro.
Yes, two very important pieces of the Turbonegro puzzle.
Who are you?
I am Tony Sylvester, aka the Duke of Nothing, the vocalist with Turbonegro.
And I am Euroboy. Solo guitarist since 1996 and one of the front guys I'd say
So congratulations with a brand new album the Rock and Roll Machine
Yes
Can you tell us a little bit about the process of making the Rock and Roll Machine it's been a good few years since the last one now this time
Yeah it's been a process, yeah. I don't think we started out with a plan of making another album, because since the last time we put out a record in 2012, you had streaming services like really breaking through, and you've been talking about the death of the album, and we thought about only releasing singles, and. But we kept on writing songs and we recorded demos and we had a great creative period in the band and then we saw 2018 approaching and that was going to be the 20th anniversary for Apocalypse Dudes which is our famous classic 90s album And we thought about different ways of making something special out of that anniversary. But somehow we just came to the conclusion that there's been so many like reunions these days, so many anniversaries. It's kind of, you've grown a little tired of it, the whole thing. So we thought maybe we should just celebrate ourselves and our fans by releasing some new stuff. And we looked at the material we had at hand and we saw that this is actually some pretty good material and although they are very different songs, they fit together as a whole. So, and so we saw if we try to make this a proper album, then it will fit perfectly with the 20th anniversary date of the Apocalypse Dudes original release. So that's the story.
And you also added a lot of synthesizers on this album compared to some of the other albums. Why was this? Why did you want to add this sawtooth with all the other cool Turbonegro stuff?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. For one thing, we at one point we just thought about what can we do to our show to make it just slightly different. we kept on playing shows and touring, and we thought about maybe getting an extra guy in could make a little difference. So we knew this guy Håkon Marius, who's an awesome guy and a great musician. And the fact is Turbonegro used to have a keyboard player in the past we used to be six guys and we just realized there are actually a lot of keyboards on the old recordings but then we also started to discussing the concept of keyboards and synthesizers in rock why is that a radical thought in 2018 because it hasn't always been that way
I think that's really And then the process of thinking about that meant that we wrote Hot for Nietzsche and Special Education. So once those were written, then we needed someone to play them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that's sort of how it happened. And I've not been in a band since we played with a keyboard player. And I missed that. Everything from that Barrel House kind of Stooges, ding, 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 ding. You know, it went through all the kind of Apocalypse Dude stuff. But then also like on Scandinavian Leather, the big full orchestral sound as well. Those were things that we just didn't have like live because we focused more on a kind of like sexual harassment was sort of almost cousins with like Ass Cobra and that kind of approach, and it being, you know, quite kind of direct. And so it was, the more you started thinking about it, more was like these other aspects of Turbo, you know. And so it was just like, it made sense to kind of, you know. And then once, and you listen to things like Fuck the World now, back with Håkon Marius, it's kind of much closer in spirit to the version that was like, you know, recorded for the record. It's, it kind of sounds way better than when we were playing it without him, you know, like it's like, oh.
Yeah, I love keyboards.
Yeah,
to the point where I'm tired of guitars almost. it's an interesting thought that when rock and roll started out, when the genre was born in the 1950s, the electric guitar was yet to be established as the first violin, or what you say, like the main instrument. I mean, some of the original rockers were keyboard players, like Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard, and like some of the like major bands from the 60s that were like keyboard driven, like the Doors. And we listened to a lot of old music in the band, and stuff like, you know, Elton John, it's like piano rock, Meatloaf, and of course The Who, that's like the perfect example of like keyboards in hard rock guitar music. But also that goes on, The Stones, The Stooges had a keyboard player, I mean even Guns N' Roses. Listen to the intro for Paradise City. It's a synth solo. So I think it was, to us, it was just a very interesting thought to bring back the bring Ebony and Ivory to the party.
Yeah.
And it was something that we didn't think was being like, people didn't think it was cool. You know, it's just like we listen to this kind of, this when we're backstage, what we're listening to is a lot of radio rock, a lot of stuff from that period, 70s through to like mid 80s. And when you think about like early ZZ Top into like the early 80s ZZ Top, like the how they managed to go from this real roots band into this really kind of, you know, almost synthetic sounding, like just, you know, and Kiss doing disco and, you know, everything. It was just like these things that started interesting us, and then we started thinking about and thinking, no one's doing it, you know, why has no one thought about doing this again? Yeah. Let's do it. So that was the kind of writing process.
It's not like we think that it's a revolutionary thing. I mean, we still we accept that we are a retro minded band, but I mean, what we do on the new record, on a couple of songs, I haven't heard that a lot in among newer rock bands.
And it's good because it covers a lot of ground. Like HM covers a lot of ground, that record. There's like the kind of the new intro to like Hot for Nietzsche has that real kind of Elton John and like Alice Cooper kind of like feel to it. And then, but then there's like On the Rag has that kind of real like Wasp, like attack synth sound that's very like late 70s, you know, kind of new wave, you know, really aggressive kind of sound on it as well, so it's not just the idea, let's just put a synth on, it's actually kind of like what tracks would benefit from what kind of keys. So there's everything from straight piano through to like very kind of synthesized, you know.
We had a lot of fun with that stuff. We had a lot of fun recording it, and he was a big part of it. Crown Prince Håkon Marius.
So you just have to admit that rock and roll isn't revolutionary anymore, but you still can provoke people, especially now with all this political correctness. You were almost thrown back to the 50s and the 60s with people getting crazed about the lyrics. Mm. And now the lyrics of Turbo Negro is probably more, what's it called, harsh, pounding than in years for the audience, because everyone are so afraid of provoking someone. How does this all work out for you now?
Well, that's a good question. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. I grew up with a sense of generational conflict among my generation and our parents. And I lived in a period in the 80s and the 90s where music was a very important way of having an identity. And I'd also say it was to a large extent still a rebellious force. I mean, Turbo Negro was a pretty radical band in the early 90s, and Tony and some of us has ties to like hardcore and punk bands and stuff like that. I'd say that at some point, maybe Kurt Cobain's suicide or something, there's just a switch in time, and from then on, I don't consider rock music or the idea of like young and free-spirited minded people being a rebellious force in society anymore, because they became the society. What was once a counterculture became the culture. So it's a different day and age we live in now.
Yeah.
But can you remember, as none of you have been in Turbo Negro since the beginning, can you remember the first time you heard them?
Absolutely.
And what it made you feel?
Well, I was working already like in independent music. So I was I was working distribution, the kind of nuts and bolts end of it. And so we were at the time, this is 96, 97. So the records that were coming out were very, very, from our end, brown packaged, very wordy, very intellectual. It was like the beginning of the kind of post-rock period. So everything was very kind of, you know, thought out. And at the same time, we had, like we were saying, the kind of like grunge and the kind of authenticity in music was really the thing. So this record came in, which was a promo sent in, which was Ass Cobra, with just this parody cover of Pet Sounds with these characters on it. And it was just like, what the hell is this? Because it was just so counter to everything else. So it felt, for me, it was like a real reset button, because it was kind of like taking back to a lot of things that, you know, I liked when I was younger. And also when it was, you know, just very kind of, you know, it was very puerile, and it was obviously very simplistic, but also done in a clearly very smart way by people who knew what they were doing. It wasn't like wasn't being made by idiots. So it was a real like, this is incredibly fucking refreshing. But that's Ass Cobra. But then I didn't see the band until Apocalypse Dudes, and I hadn't actually heard Apocalypse Dudes when I saw the band. So again, it was, now it switched up again, was now very sophisticated and very kind of, you know, a much more, much less punk rock, and much more kind of like classic rock almost. Everything got sort of changed again. I was like, oh, even better, you know. So then I heard Apocalypse Dudes. So that was definitely the first time I heard them. And I was a fan from then, you know.
You ended up being the Turbo Jugend boss of
But it was funny because Turbo Jugend at the time was very much like, the band weren't around anymore. So it was much more a kind of like fun, like a nod to other people, like, oh, you like the same things I do, if you like this. You know, it was definitely a fun thing. But then through that, met the band. Then through then, started working with the band, doing the PR, and then somehow ended up singing in the band. So it's probably the strangest journey in like rock history in that sense, because it's kind of like, I don't think there's anyone who were like, I was the accountant for the band, and then I ended up the singer. Like, it's a fairly unique story.
It's like the movie Rockstar with
Mark
Wahlberg.
It is, if it was much more like about someone, you know, if it was much more sort of realistic. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Totally.
What about you, Knut? You came in 96, but the band was already like 7 years old at that time.
Yeah, I am. At the time when I joined, I was a friend of the band, and we went to university together, Brinnan, and I had some connections to the band. I was a roadie for them at the Quart Festival in 1994, and then me and Happy Tom, we had also had a band called the Vikings, which was like a transitional band between punk rock Turbo and like classic rock Turbo. But I remember the first time I ever heard Turbo Negro. It was when I was in ninth grade, Niende Klasse, and they had just put out their first single, which was called Route Zero. And a couple of friends in class had actually mail ordered the single, and then they got it in the mail the day after. So they went to the post office in lunch break at school, and then we went home to one of the guys to listen to it. We listened to both sides just once, and I remember walking home from school that day, and I had those songs in my head. It made a big impression. It was a bit I was inspired, but I was also at the time I was also learning guitar. I was a skilled musician compared to them. Maybe you could consider myself a talent, but there was this thing about they did an interview at the same time for a Norwegian music paper called Puls, and the interview was really strong, and the press release for that single was all rhetorically strong, so you felt that this was a very like powerful milieu, you know. Yeah. And I guess that was my first meeting with the spirit of Thomas Seltzer. I liked the music. It wasn't as great as the Stooges or MC5, which they were aspiring to, but there was no doubt that this was the coolest guys in town.
We've been talking about the story and the new album, and since this is quite a short interview in the Jernverket terms, we need to pick out some good stories from your career as a band. It doesn't have to be drug related, which every band thinks every time I ask about this. It just has to be some crazy or weird or wild or fun story from the time with touring. It could be a Trubbejugend story, or something that just happens when you're on tour with Turbonegro. Something Spinal Tapish, maybe.
That's always a hard question, because the really good stories are the ones that you can't tell.
Yeah.
That's or very that, true. That you wouldn't understand. Now, how's it been for you, Tony? Is there anything?
Okay, my problem is, when we go on tour, I don't drink, because obviously I've got a show the next day. So I kind of save these things up. So every day I hear the war stories from them coming back in the morning, like everyone who's out all night and everyone who's like that. And I sit there and I hear these things. And so I'm getting ready for the last day of tour. Like, I can't fucking wait. It's going to be so good. It's been so Babylonian so far. Like, so-and-so never made it back to the hotel. You know, we had to go and find that one. And I should point out, it's the crew. It's not the band members at this stage. We should definitely say this. Anyway, come to the last day and I'm ready to go, and everyone is dead. Everyone's just like, oh no, it's been really, like, it's been a bit much. So I'm always just like, like on the last day, and it's always like really anticlimactic for me, because I'm never... I tell you what, recording Sexual Harassment, there were some pretty good stories. Again, I wasn't party to, because they were in New York. And of course, the band had only just got back together, so there was a real kind of sense of like... excitement, and the basic tracking was done first 2-3 days, and then we were in the studio for 3 weeks. We're mainly doing vocals and my overdubs and stuff, so that was a pretty good time.
I've become so old that my stories are not necessarily like rock stories. It's more like sweet stories, where I remember myself as a younger man, and I feel sorry for that person, you know.
Yeah.
And I just remember when me and Happy Tom went to Stockholm to mix the Scandinavian Letter album. We had been recording that album in our own studio at Grünerløkka in Oslo in the late fall and the winter and over the Christmas vacation. And then we were set to go to Stockholm to mix with like a hotshot heavy metal producer called Joe Barisi. We had a really early flight that morning, I remember. But the thing was, the only thing we needed to record left to record for the album was the intro, and we had basically one day to do it. So we planned it. So we just called a bunch of friends to come to the studio to have like a studio party to make the intro. We had a couple of guys from that band. I don't know if you remember that band and Amulet, Torgny Amdam. So and there was like friends of friends come by. So like, the studio was like full of people, and this was just before Røykeloven, the smoke law in Norway. So it was legitimate to just like everybody was smoking inside, and this party went on for like 24 hours. I remember me and Happy Tom. We wiped off the tape from the tape recorder and put and then went straight to the airport. And the thing was, this was before digital. So all the music was on 2-inch 24 track tapes, which are really heavy. And there was a bunch of them, so we had stacked them in a really heavy flight case. And we came to Stockholm early in the morning, and it was fucking cold. It was, I mean, I don't know if you've been to Stockholm in the winter, but it can be super cold. Not like Oslo, it's more like being in Russia or something. And we came to that studio, a Polar studio, the old ABBA studio, and there was no one there because it was so early in the morning. It was still dark. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And we had this huge flight case with all the tapes. And it was so cold, so we were just basically walking back and forth on a bridge over the canal in the early morning, waiting for somebody to appear in the studio. And then finally, like 10 or 11 o'clock, somebody came and locked us in. And then we opened this flight case, and it just smelled like a bonfire because of all the... there's been so much cigarette smoking in the studio. So like all the Swedish guys are like laughing. What have you guys been doing? It was just like somebody's just lit up a cigarette. It's maybe not such a good story, but that's the things I remember. Stuff like that, weird situations.
Yeah. I remember when we played in Stockholm, we launched... Sexual Harassment, and we played, that was a pretty weird moment. We were playing in like, what was the hotel? It's like the Grand, like the ridiculously like fancy hotel. And we were playing on basically the veranda, the terrace outside the bar. So we'd set it up with all the press. So it was a really surreal night. And one of the crowning moments of recording Sexual Harassment is we got Ben Montench from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers to play piano on it, because he was friends with the producer, friends with Matt Sweeney. So we're playing, and of course, we're playing like with the harbour here, you know, downtown Stockholm. And we look down, and Ben Montench is just like there, kind of looking up, like staying in this hotel. Why is there a fucking band playing on the terrace? Like, why is it annoying me? And then looks down and realizes, recognizes him. So there's this moment of, oh, hi, how are you? Great. And we just kind of stop playing and just start talking to them. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
And then you know, that's one of the moments I've been. Yeah, it's pretty good being in this band. Because literally, I'd only just started in a band. Yeah, it was like less than a year. And I'm like, this is pretty fun.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Seems like your tour manager is starting to get stressed. Do we still have time to pick the songs?
Yeah.
Do you want us to like introduce them, or could we supply them on a list?
Of course, you can supply them on a list if we can't.
Yeah, that
we
might
can't.
Be better, because then we can talk about it.
Yeah.
But for a new one, what do you want to play? What would you want to play off the new record?
Oh, you could choose it.
Yeah.
I can pick an old one, maybe.
Pick the new one, you pick the new one.
Yeah.
Jeez.
If everyone heard the single, should we play one which isn't one of the singles?
Then? Yeah, because the single is listed on Radio
Okay. So I think of a song that isn't, which hasn't been released as a single, it's probably got to be, I don't know. Because I want to say Skinhead Rock and Roll.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Skinhead Rock and Roll. Yeah, to me, that's like one of the great things about, it's a great, it's very archetypal Turbo song in a, it's not what you would expect at all. I think if anyone's going to that song expecting it to be like an Oi song or a song you know, in a style of Skinheads, and they're going to be, you know, that's going to be pretty funny shock. It's more the idea that we had, which was that Andrew Lloyd Webber decides to make a musical about Skinheads, and so he hires Van Halen or hires a hard rock band to play like a rock opera song about Skinheads, and that amused us greatly as a concept, and there's and there's the song, you know. So I love the idea of like a real proper like vintage Skinhead guy listening to that song and a look of horror on his face with that synth intro, you know. I don't know, it just makes me laugh.
That's anyway awesome.
I'd like to pick a song from a record called Retox from 2007. To me, that record is it's a bit special. It's a bit of a weird record because half of it is kind of ambitious, and you hear that we are trying to make proper music, and then the rest of it is kind of like fucking it up. It's like we're not gonna make it anyway, so just let's say that we don't give a fuck or something. I mean, there's songs about like losing your hair and and gaining weight and stuff like that. So there's one song on that album that that I really like. It's called Boys From Nowhere, and that's one of the songs where we still tried to see if we could make something big and beautiful out of this. And for a while I thought that song was a bit too ambitious maybe, or a bit too serious. But listening back to it today, I think it's a good document of our abilities at the time. Mm. Yeah. So
cool.
Boys From Nowhere.
It's funny because I still also claim sometimes that I think one of the reasons why Tom asked me if I wanted to try out for Turbo was because we'd been discussing it, and I actually said Retox is probably my second favorite like Turbo record, to which everyone I say that to, and he even looks at me like, the fuck is wrong with you? But I think it's a really, that I listened to that record so much when it came out, and I think it's a really, really, I don't know why, whether people maybe didn't pay attention to it or something, or
we started making it in 2006. And that was the time when Hank's health was starting to, what do you say, deteriorate, becoming worse. So the first half of that record was like being made in a time when the band was when he was in a better shape, and and then we saw that we can't work with this guy anymore. So I was like, the rest half of the album was just it wasn't bad, but it had a different direction, a very negative direction.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I wish we could talk a lot longer, but now we can't. So maybe you should send me a list of songs instead.
Yeah, we definitely will.
We'll make a jingle, take a photo, and then you were.
Okay, why don't we do it like where I say, you say I'm Euroboy, and I say, and I'm the Duke of Nothing from Turbonegro, and then you say we're listening to, because then
because then you can
get them. Well, you start. You say this is Canute or Euroboy, and I say, and I'm Tony Sylvester, from Turbonegro, and then you say, and we're listening to.
Okay. Yeah,
so you start it, I do the middle, then you do the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Euroboy from Turbonegro.
And this is the Duke of Nothing from Turbonegro.
And you are listening to... What was the name of the program again? Jernverket!
There you go.
Okay, you can do it.
That was good, though. I like the losing it and then bringing it back.
And I should just bring it down the record level.
That was basically Retox. Yeah. That was making Retox.
Yeah, that was
a radio
that
jingle.
That was Retox in 5 seconds.
Exactly.
Okay, maybe it was good.
Yeah, I think leave it.
Du har hørt et intervju med Turboneger innspilt I fjor vinter. Neste vekka skal det handle om Tons of Rock. Det bare noen vekker til jeg tar av med skikkelig rockefestival på Ekeberg, og jeg har et stevnemøte med bookingsjef Jarle I forbindelse med det. Jeg spent på hva han har å fortelle oss om Kiss, Def Leppard og Slayer, blant annet, og hva vi kan vente oss opp og slette der I år. Abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Kjempefint om du legger igjen en god anmeldelse, for da går podcasten opp på listene, og det gjør også at jeg kan fortsette å lage podcasten. Og I den anledning så Jernverket også ut etter nye samarbeidspartnere. Hvis du vil annonsere via podcast, kan du sende meg en melding. Og husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook for månedens album fra Katakomben, diskusjoner, konkurranser og nyheter. Helle Steinkløv, det meg. Jeg gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Hei så lenge!